Session number 3966, reel number 1.
John Milne, take number 1. Now then, Mr. Milne, can you tell me about your background before you joined the army?
Very briefly, from the north of Scotland, a little place called Keith, and it was just like everything else, went through school days and went to the local grammar school. But of course, on leaving, it was a problem getting employment, but I was a baker for a short while, learning to be a baker, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and working right through till four. It was a hand bakery. But then I decided to join the army, which quite a number of us were doing, and underage, of course, but officially it was 18, but in my case it was just over 15. But I joined the Gordons, which is the regiment for our area. And I am very grateful that I did join the Gordon Highlanders, because it was thanks to them that I really grew up in every way, as I was only a youngster. There we are. Went to Aberdeen and trained as a recruit, and then joined our 2nd Battalion Gordons, who were down in Borden. And it was just regimental training with opportunities for promotion and so on. Fortunately, I was very keen on sports and games. My education, having been at the grammar school, was quite good. The result was that I was able to get my 2nd class certificate of education, and then my 1st, which of course stood me in very good stead later on. I was posted to our depot in Aberdeen in 1928 as a corporal, young corporal, and I was a sergeant, and I was an instructor there until 1930. But it was during early 1930 when I applied to be considered for the Nigerian Regiment, which comes under the heading of the Royal West African Frontier Force. I had a cousin serving in Nigeria, and quite a number of Gordon Highlanders had been selected and worked with the Nigerian Regiment over the many years, so we had a little bit of background about that. It was a very sought after appointment by NCOs in the British Army and officers. It meant that you were away for 6 years if you were appointed, and of 18 months actually in the country, and roughly 4 months home on leave, and you did 3 tours which covered a period of 6 years. Well, I applied in 1930. Thanks to my commanding officer, he did recommend me. I was then had to wait, of course, to see what was going to happen. I was called down to London to the Colonial Office for a personal assessment. They had all my military records, so there was no question of anything else. It was all straightforward from that point of view with the various certificates I'd had. I met this officer in the Colonial Office, who gave me a personal assessment test and various other things, and most understanding. Of course, he didn't say that I was appointed or not. He wished me luck and so on, found out why I wanted to go to Nigeria. Fortunately, having had a cousin there, that was in my very helpful.
Well, why did you want to go to Nigeria? What sort of things did you say to him?
Well, the main thing was I'd heard so much about the Royal West African Frontier Force. And the main thing really was was an opportunity to get away from routine soldiering in England, primarily also with an opportunity of trying to get promotion. Promotion was very, very slow in the British Army in peacetime in those days, which was understandable. And of course, certain regiments in particular were very keen to give officers and NCOs a chance to get other experiences which would stand in good stead also for the regiment. And that was really primarily the thing. And it so happened that the Gordon Highlanders they were very keen for Gordons to get around. They were very conscious. We had a very good standard in the Gordon Highlanders for working with African or other regiments, like in India in particular. Our sister regiments were they had Indian. This was pre-war days, of course. So there was a terrific link with an encouragement to get out, sort of thing. So I was very lucky in having a commanding officer, of course, who considered that I thought I would be all right.
There was considerable competition for these posts.
Very much, yes, because it was open to the whole of the British Army. So consequently, you see, when the application was put in the Part 1 orders, that vacancies were in the Royal West African Frontier Force in particular, or the Sudan Defence Force, the case may be, of course, there was NCOs and officers applying from all over the British Army. So competition was very keen. And anyway, there you are. That was the sort of the thing. So you made your application. In this case, I had my interview. So it was just a question now of waiting and hoping that I would be appointed. So immediately after the interview, I was then sent round to Tooley Street, which was the sort of crown agent for the colonies place where you were measured up for uniform and everything. Everybody went round there whether they were going to be appointed or not, because it was the opportunity to get all your measurements and fitted out and everything for your uniform and so on. Then back to Aberdeen, the depot, to wait. Well, fortunately, in 1930, I was busy with our display team, which went round the Highland Games giving PT displays. I was very keen on PT, having been a PT instructor as well, but this was an extra. And so in between training recruits and doing PT displays, I hadn't time to think about the application, which was rather good. Anyway, in due course, the next thing came. I had to go to Edinburgh for a medical now with the with the Colonial Office consultant there. So, of course, my medical records, everything was straightforward there by being in the Army. But it so happened that the man I saw, this consultant sergeant, he had served in Nigeria. And, of course, when I said that I was interested in Nigeria, of course, I had a lovely link with him. So it all just seemed to fit in rather nicely. He was a Scot, of course, and had been sergeant and everything in Nigeria too for quite a number of years. So it was a very useful contact, and he was most helpful and, of course, gave me all sorts of advice about health problems and so on, and what to look out for as far as Nigeria was concerned. So that was another little link in this lovely chain of memories.
What sort of advice did he give you?
Well, particularly on malaria, of course. There's malaria and the waterborne diseases. There's bilharzia and so on, the various things like that. But it was just a general thing on looking after personal health, because he said once you get out there, you'll soon find other things. But the main thing was your own personal care, because it was important. And naturally, you had to keep yourself in health, otherwise you were useless. Anyway, so then back to Aberdeen to carry on waiting for my sailing orders if I was going to be appointed. In due course, they arrived. I was called in front of my commanding officer, very fine man too, and he congratulated me on being appointed. And, of course, he then warned me, and in words, "Woe betide you if you do anything wrong to the name of the Gordon Highlander. Don't forget, it's all right, you've got this appointment, but you're a Gordon Highlander first and foremost, and you must keep the good name of the Gordons." And it's quite true, because if anything did happen to you and you were returned to your regiment from a colonial appointment, you were finished. That was that. Anyway, that was just a very nice reminder, because although I was feeling very proud that I'd been appointed, I was brought down to earth and reminded that it was thanks to the Gordons. Anyway, there we are. So then I'm appointed, receive my sailing instructions. So, of course, great excitement. I had to go to Liverpool and sail from Liverpool.
What preparations did you have to make before going to Liverpool about getting kit?
Well, that was all arranged, because, you see, I'd been measured and everything, and in the joining instructions it said that there would be a representative off the RAF there, and everything appertaining to the equipment, the camp equipment and all that sort of thing, would be explained to me in Liverpool. As a Gordon handler, I was finished with. I didn't have to carry any equipment or anything. That all had to be handed in. The only thing I carried was my own personal, the kilt, and my own sort of personal uniform, which of course we had bought, just as a dress effect, really. But otherwise, I travelled as a civilian. And so then, excitement, of course, down to Liverpool, which to me was very thrilling, really. I was going out on a new venture. So I arrived in Liverpool and to sail on the Apapa. The ships then, the Elder Dempster's Royal Medical Service, Mail Service, they sailed every fortnight from Prince's Landing Stages, as regular as clockwork, which we appreciated very much in later days when I was out in Nigeria. Anyway, to arrive in Liverpool, there we were met by, in my case, with a Sergeant Major who was the representative of the Royal West African Frontier Force. The officers were met by an officer. And they had a cabin set aside where you were. Everything was explained to you. Made very welcome. A list of all my kit was given to me and explained. There were so many boxes down in the hold, which I wouldn't see till we arrived in Nigeria. There was two boxes in my in the stateroom, as it was called, and he then took me to the stateroom cabin, and there was two steel trunks, small steel trunks, and there was the personal clothing to be able to change into en route, my uniform, tropical uniform. But the very important thing in one of them was what's called a Nigerian handbook issued for that year. And there it really became the family Bible, as far as I was concerned, because it was an outline of everything appertaining to Nigeria, the different government departments, health service, and all that sort of thing. Of course, naturally, a bit on the climate and the country, tribes, and so on like that. So it really gave you a very good background on paper. Anyway, that was for later. That was for reading on the boat. So there was that. And then, of course, an opportunity was taken to introduce you to any other BNCOs, British Non-Commissioned Officers, as we were called, that may be returning on their second tour or third tour. So, of course, before long, you were really linked up with various people. And it was a very good thing, and it was very, very... I'm very grateful to it.
Now, about your voyage out, I believe these other NCOs were very useful to you.
Yes, the point was then, you see, you had 14 days. It was 14 days from Liverpool to Lagos, and on the way out calling at the various African ports. I'll just mention that now, and then that will be sufficient. From Gambia, Madeira first, of course, that was very interesting too. Then Gambia, Sierra Leone, the Gold Coast, and then Lagos. But from the point of view of the NCOs, they were all naturally had a link by being in the army. They themselves had gone through the pangs of being a first tourer, so they were quite prepared to help and tell you. Of course, like everything else, the more times you go out, the stories get a little bit you take a bit of salt. But anyway, that doesn't matter. I was new, I was prepared to listen, and it was most helpful. But in addition to that, not only we had these NCOs, there was various other members. We were travelling second class, by the way. First class was, of course, everybody over a certain salary, who were the various professionals, as one would call them. But, by the way, the salary was $300 a year in 1930, which sounds a lot of money. But, of course, that was your salary for the year, and, of course, you were responsible for looking after yourself, your food, paying your own servants, and so on like that. Anyway, that's by the way. So, in addition to BNCOs, we had various other people of different departments going back. Railway people, Europeans that were local foremen and that, surfacemen, Public Works Department, people on the forestry, certain departments in the forestry traveled second class, and also the Survey Department, and the coal mines. There's a coal mine in Enugu, and so there was a few miners. In addition to that, of course, there was other civilians who were missionaries and some traders. So on there you had a lovely cross section of people returning to Nigeria. Some of them had been out quite a long time, and they also were most interesting to and very helpful. So the result was you had 14 days to move around, as you would say, and really you could get a lovely background of what was ahead of you.
Can you remember any particular advice that you were given by these experienced old coasters?
Main one usually was health. And of course, with, as far as the army was concerned, of course, then it was also, in my case, learning all about the African soldiers, which I was going to be working with. So it became really talks on tribes, the names of the different tribes, and certain customs and things that had happened to them, and so on like that. So another thing too, it gave you a good chance to find out ways of life. And so as we were 14 days on the boat, it was an opportunity also to improve on one's bridge, which was a very essential thing in Nigeria, to be able to play bridge in particular, especially in outstations. So there was all sorts of angles like that that you wouldn't get.
How did you pass your time on board ship?
On board the ship, well, again, this was rather fortunate. My cabin mate, who was returning for his third tour, was a Scots guardsman, and he had a set of bagpipes, being a Scot. And so, fortunately, I was keen on games, as I had been, and also did quite a bit of Highland dancing. So, of course, we had to have entertainment on the way. So I was roped in to help out and running the games, helping in games with other people. But of course, in this case, being a Highland dancer, I was able to sort of dance. And so we had Highland dancing classes. There were a couple of, three ladies actually travelling that time, so it was very good fun to have them. And so we had Dashing White Sergeant and various other Highland dancers. So that fitted in beautifully, and there we are. So, of course, but that, unbeknown to me then, was a start off, because every time I travelled in a ship and a papa on the Elder Dempster line, I got roped in to run the games, the sports side. We used to get up early in the morning to fill the time and do a little what's now jogging, but then we just sort of trundle round the decks. There was nobody about, and it was a sort of a 20 minutes little bit of exercise before breakfast. Anyway, these are just sort of some of the things that happened, but that's a sort of generally the drill. And so it made a lovely link, because we were able to know each other, and a lot of friendships were made even in that short time, because before the war you pretty well travelled as regular as clockwork, and the result was that when you were returning 18 months later, you would more than likely find the people you're picking and meeting up, the people that you hadn't seen from the time before.
Now then, how about your arrival in Nigeria? Where did you first?
Yes, we arrived in Lagos. Again, of course, I had the good fortune of having my cabin mate, Jock Stewart, and of course he knew all the ropes. So you arrived in Lagos, and it's quite a busy port, and of course you had an idea, because you'd seen what happened in Sierra Leone and Accra and that sort of thing before, the activity of all the Africans dashing around carrying things and so on their head. But anyway, in Lagos it was straightforward. We then met our, at least he came on the boat, on the ship I should say, and Mike, in this case, was an RQMS. He was giving our posting instructions of where to go to, which, of course, everybody was waiting patiently for. There were only five NCOs, including myself this time, so it didn't take long to get our posting instructions. And fortunately, Jock Stewart and I were posted to the 3rd Nigeria Regiment. Everything was really done out in meticulous detail, our joining instructions. Each regiment, each battalion had their own way of doing it, but in the Nigeria 3rd Battalion, they were exceptionally good because it went into detail in every case, because this was Lagos, and we had to get round to Calabar. And, of course, if you had a map and you could see where it is, then you could picture it. But anyway, I better deal with first of all, all our kit had to come off. That was the first time then we saw all our loads. Again, this coming back to our load list, which I'd got in Liverpool. Now we saw what was happening. The various boxes came up from the hold. They were stacked, and we checked them in to see if everything was correct. There were 6 loads altogether, made up into short and small compact boxes. I didn't know I knew the contents on paper, but I hadn't seen them, because straight away those loads were then taken straight over to the Day Spring, which was a small steamer that sailed along the coast, because that afternoon we had to leave for a place called Port Harcourt, which was 300 miles away. So there we are, the boxes and everything disappeared again to go on to the Day Spring. But in the meantime, and between now and 3 o'clock, Jock Stewart, we immediately went to the Treasury, where of course we made all arrangements for our banking of our money, and also to get an advance of money, because we were a bit short, having been 14 days on the boat. And
can you elaborate on that?
Well, we had an advance of money, you see, because you see, I had no payment when we left from my army salary, and this was the first time that I was able to get any money in Nigeria. So the Treasury, where we went to, they were like a bank, of course. They immediately gave me an advance on my first month's salary, which was to cover expenses and travel and so on. We had to complete all our documents from the point of view of bank, where we want the money paid and so on. In this case, it was the Bank of British West Africa. There was other banks, but in our case, it was straightforward, the Bank of British West Africa. So we're able to get an advance of money. It was really a month's salary, which, of course, 14 days I was already entitled to, being on the ship, you see. But that was half pay. You only got half pay until you arrived in Nigeria. And then once you stepped in Nigeria, then you were on full pay.
Well, before we leave Lagos, what were your first impressions of Africa?
Well, it was really, there was not much, because everything was such a hive of industry. And you can picture we were running against time. So it was a question of getting over to the Treasury. The thing was, really, my first impression was going in a taxi. If one travels in a taxi in Lagos in those days and survived it, you think you were doing rather well. But it was a question of rush and so on, and you really didn't see much, except we had an impression. The marina, you could, and the hive of activity actually in the quay side. So I didn't see much of Lagos as such, because by the time we made these various arrangements, then we had lunch. We had to get our own lunch, which of course we went to one of the hotels. There are many of them. And then it was back to the harbour, 2 o'clock, to get ready for sailing at 3. So that was rather a rush. So really, I didn't see much of Lagos, but it was just general activity and turmoil and noise.
Was it on this trip you met Charlie Brown? I remember last time you told me about
Charlie
Brown.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, yeah, that was on our way out. I should have mentioned. I forgot about that. That was at Freetown. And, of course, as I say, you called it Gambia. Then at Freetown, which is a lovely natural harbour, and as soon as the ship anchored, of course, there was the various Africans came with the little canoes sailing all round and asking you to throw money to them so they could dive. And he was the character. And he was dressed up with just a loincloth. He had a starched sort of collar effect round his neck and a tile hat. And he was there, and he would throw coins to him, and of course he very ceremoniously raised his hat, took it off, took his collar off, and then dived in for the money. And according to how much he managed to collect when he returned, he would then address you in very effusive terms in his pidgin English.
This could be quite embarrassing for the ladies, I believe.
Oh yes, because if there was any ladies hanging over, and it used to be the trick that if there was any lady going out for the first time, he would get her to throw plenty of coins in, and then he would salute her, you see, and wish her well, and may she have plenty pickings, and all this, you know, good health, my dear, and so on. Yes, it was quite funny, really. But anyway, that was just one of the interludes, like many other things. The Takoradi was also interesting, because there the ship couldn't go right in owing to the high surf, and it was you first saw the various surf boats coming, being rowed out with goods to be put onto the ship or goods to take off. And of course then we had the famous mammy chair, as they called it.
What was that?
That was just a sort of a wooden bucket affair which could seat four people, and that was how the passengers were lowered down onto the launches to take them ashore. So it used to be quite fun, and especially if there was a high surf running, it was quite tricky. But it was all interesting. It filled in the time, because there was quite a lot of waiting time there. And it depended on how the voyage was running, if you were able to get ashore or not. I only managed once to get ashore at Accra, of all the times that I did travel, because we were running sort of late, as the case may be.
Were you surprised, as it were, by the darkness of the skins of the Africans? Were you prepared for that?
Yes, I was, as it happened, and they're not all dark. Some of them are very light-skinned, so that... I wasn't so much surprised, having listened to quite a lot of the tales, and of course quite a number of the NCOs had their photographs too, which was interesting too, from their own albums, and so that was very nice. So now we're back to Lagos, 2 o'clock to get on to the Day Spring. Now this launch, at least small boat, followed the coastline right round to Port Harcourt, which was then really my first introduction of how sticky and hot Nigeria can be. So, because we were pretty well following the coastline right the way around, and clear of the mouth of the delta, the Niger Delta, until we came to the passageway that takes you up to Port Harcourt. And that was only roughly 40 miles up what was the Bonny River, but it was really part of the delta. And here you had very sticky, clammy, and again you were almost on the mangrove swamp.